Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our second finance meeting. I'll lose track after a while as to which one it is, but today's the 24th. Welcome, everyone, and someone who's here that I didn't get to introduce yesterday among all the people that allow us to do our jobs because they help so much and make things happen, and that's Matt Greening over here. Thanks, Matt, and welcome back. We sure enjoyed working with you last year. We're going to have some overviews and overview with David Teal today, and we will go through kind of our take on the governor's budget. Present at the table are Senator Fairclough, Senator Bishop, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Hoffman, Senator Meyer, and myself, Senator Kelly. What else is on here that we're going to do today? Anything? Yeah, operating capital and mental health. So, as presented by David Teal. David, if you want to come up and... You know the drill better than we do. Morning.
Morning. And I know I've talked to a few of you, and it's a few I haven't seen yet, but it's nice to see you again now, and welcome to Juneau. I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance Division. And as you know, the division is statutorily charged with budget review functions, and our review includes the overview publication, which...
David, for some reason, I'm just catching a lot of bass while you're talking. Could you move it just a little closer?
The overview includes information that's intended to get you off to a good start for subcommittee process. It was delivered to your offices last Wednesday, so if you haven't had a chance to read it, I hope you get to look at it soon. I'm certainly not going to get to the level of subcommittee discussion today, but I do want to talk about some issues raised in the overview. We're facing a deficit. That's no surprise. There was a deficit last year, you knew it, and I think you expected one in 15 as well. Unfortunately, it appears that it's not just an FY15 deficit. It may be the first of many deficits that you face for the next 10 years or so. And I'd like to add some perspective to that. The FY14 pre-transfer deficit was about $2.2 billion. That's 45% of our unrestricted general fund revenue. We spend about $7 billion, and the revenue is about $5 billion. So after transfers in FY14, which we removed some money from savings accounts, that reduces the deficit below the $2.2 billion that I just mentioned. And then revenue forecast appears to be slightly pessimistic so far. Both price and production are a little above the projected amounts. And so I'm thinking that the forecast might be about $300 million low. If you take that $300 million and say, well, I think we might end up the year, FY14, with a deficit of about $1.6 billion, it's still going to take a third of our statutory budget reserve account to fill that deficit. So, turning to FY15, the governor says, or the governor's fiscal summary shows a deficit of about $1 billion. But that's before the legislature adds capital projects. And, you know, I don't know how much will be added, but I presume that the legislature will add capital spending to the governor's proposal. Now, in addition to that, there's $700 million to $1 billion of retirement assistance that the governor proposes to use the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund for rather than GF. If you were to not accept that proposal in full and use general funds to make the retirement contributions, that's another $700 million. So the governor's budget is about $1 billion deficit. If you add $400 million of capital projects and you use $700 million for retirement assistance, you're right back in that neighborhood of $2 billion budget deficits.
Senator Meyer, Dave, could you pause just for a second?
Sure.
Yeah, David, I appreciate that. You're talking about the unfunded liability and the payments that we have, the obligations that we have, the $700 million. And so one of the options that the governor has suggested is to do a $3 billion cash infusion. But I don't believe he's showing that as spending. Wouldn't that be more accurate to show that as spending rather than a fund transfer, especially since it's going into a trust fund and we can't get access to it anymore, and since it's coming out of the CBR, which could be used as spending money for roads, bridges, etc. Your thoughts?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, technically the governor's presentation is correct. The CBR is not considered unrestricted general funds, it's considered other funds. He shows it in that other funds column as a $3 billion expenditure. But he also shows it as a transfer, withdrawing $3 billion from the CBR, so it looks like it's a net zero. But it's only a net zero after transfers. We tend to look at the pre-transfer numbers because we think that's more in line with cash flow. And it's really, if you're trying to live within your means, it's cash flow that matters more than the post-transfer number, which is eliminating a deficit by withdrawing money from a savings account. And so both numbers are useful. They have different purposes. But, you know, certainly you could look at this as it's $3 billion taken from reserves that you expect to spend perhaps for other purposes. The second issue here is that, as you know, the Constitution requires that the CBR is repaid anytime you draw money from it. How do you repay that? At some point in the future, you're going to use general funds to pay off the liability to the CBR. So in that sense, it's not general fund expenditures now, but it will be at some point in the future, assuming that you pay it back. But as you know, you can go for 10 or 15 years without paying it back. The Constitution simply says you will, but it doesn't say when.
Okay. Senator Bishop?
So if I heard everything you said, then it does, at some point in time, it does get to be a general fund spend.
It does. Could you repeat that question?
I said at some point in time, it does, the three, with the Constitution mandated, you have to pay the $3 billion back, or whatever the draw is, at some point in time it's going to show up as a general fund spend on some budget.
Yeah. And through the chair, that's correct.
Go ahead, David. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go back to our current year. Last year we anticipated a draw from the SBR, I think, of a quarter of $1 billion, but I think that, or in 13, but that had to be adjusted, and it was substantially higher than the $250 million. Was it closer to $500 million that we had to draw from the SBR as of June 30th this year?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, right now we're looking at a draw from the SBR of about $1.9 billion, and that's after transfers. The cash flow deficit is about $2.2 billion. But
what did we anticipate?
David, there's a real problem with the microphones. Can we get some boost on treble there a little bit, maybe? Thank you.
All the microphones or just mine?
I think all of them are a little tough, yeah. Oh, okay.
I just switched, Marcus, we'll try this.
All right.
I don't know what that deficit was projected to be when you left last session, but I think it was about $1 billion less.
From the SBRs, which you're talking about?
Yeah. Yes. Well, the deficit does, I mean,
exactly.
Yes, yeah. Same answer, because the deficit would be filled first from the SBR.
Right.
The real problem, in my opinion.
Can I stop you just a second? I just want to make sure I followed his question. We anticipated, and you don't remember, but it was somewhere around $250 million.
Well, it was, Mr. Chairman, my point was that whatever we anticipated, it was substantially higher because of lower oil prices and lower throughput, which puts us even farther behind than what we originally anticipated.
Right. Okay.
And again, through the chair, there was a deficit in 13 of $250 million. The anticipated 14 deficit was about $1 billion, and it's going to turn out to be closer to $2 billion. And unfortunately, looking at the figure one here, which is appears in the overview, similar deficits are projected throughout the forecast period. And the forecast expenditures here are based on zero growth in agency operations, a flat $800 million a year capital budget. So basically, you're looking at a no-growth budget except for retirement assistance. So this is not the governor's proposal here. This is just staying where we are with paying an increasing amount of general funds towards retirement assistance. It's fairly flat, goes from, you know, $6.7 billion up to $7 billion by the end of the period, and revenue up a little, then down a little. So basically, deficits of nearly $2 billion, sometimes up to $2.5 billion annually through that period. Now, some may wonder how likely it is that the legislature would adopt a no-growth budget. I'm not here to tell you what to do or whether I think you might succeed at doing it. But I can tell you it's very difficult. You've all worked with operating budgets before and know how difficult it is to reduce them at all, let alone have a no-growth budget for many years. Just to put that in perspective, the annual rate of growth in agency operating budgets has been over 7% annually for the last 8 years. So,
David, I think we can draw some conclusion, at least from an eighth of that, which is last year's budget was not a 7.2% increase. Right. That was 0. What, I don't remember exactly what it was. So there is some indication that there is will in this body to at least drastically slow down the rate of growth.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. The FY14 growth was quite a bit lower. The FY15 governor's proposal is also almost a no-growth budget.
By the way, I want to make a statement too, and that is, as we discuss deficits here and the fact that the budget has grown, at least from the chair's perspective, I do not criticize those that came before me for these expanded budgets, because I don't know that I wouldn't have been in the exact same boat. We're just where we are, and that's the reality of it. We have to figure our way out, and I'm going to refrain from criticizing those who came before, because it ain't easy.
Good comment, Mr. Chairman. At the same time, I would like to point out that those who came before you may have big budgets, but they also saved a pile of money. And if they hadn't set aside this $15 billion, your situation would be much worse than it is.
And last year was my year to compliment them for saving money. This is my year to absolve them of blame. And by the way, I was one of those chairmen before, so I can't. Go ahead, David.
Okay. So, I can't tell you again what to do. I can show you what would happen if the revenue forecast is correct, and if you do achieve the expenditures that I just mentioned, which is essentially a no-growth budget other than retirement costs. And it's not a pretty sight. Even if you constrain budget growth, reserves of about $15 billion, $16 billion, disappear by 2024. So at that time, we would be in for a very hard landing, because we would then have, with no reserves, we would have to cut $2.5 billion from our budget in a single year, or borrow to make it through. So in order to reach a sustainable budget or even get a softer landing here, there are several options available. One of them, of course, is the old fiscal policy options. They are a broad-based tax, income tax, sales tax, one of the two, maybe both. And then, of course, cap or eliminate permanent fund dividends. Those options have proven to be highly unpopular in the past, not just with legislature, but I think the citizens have not viewed them favorably. You also have capital budget reductions as a possibility. We've always viewed the capital budget as the shock absorber for the budget. That it may be high now, but it will drop drastically when the revenues fall up. That's true, but recent budgets have contained many phased projects, some of them quite large, and there's no longer the flexibility in reducing the capital budget that there used to be, assuming that you want to continue funding those phased projects. But, you know, who wants to pull the plug on Susitna, Watana, or Kabata, or Fairbanks Gas, or the in-state gas line? But if you don't reduce spending on those capital projects, then your capital budgets are very difficult to reduce. So I think one of your toughest decisions is going to be deciding whether you can afford all of those major capital projects and the smaller projects along with them, or whether you're going to have to reduce capital spending and in some cases take money that you've appropriated for some of those big projects and say, we just can't afford it. I'm not telling you that. I'm saying that that's a decision that you have to make. The third option here is to review agency budgets. Ledge Finance, for the past 3 or 4 years, has prepared look-back graphs. And there, the purpose of those things is to show you very clearly what programs, what allocations have increased. In other words, where have you spent money? In theory, you would at the same time be saying, what did we get for our money? What value was there in increasing this particular program or this allocation? So that tied in, especially in the House, with some performance measures and things that we actually look at, what's the value we're getting for our money. The second reason those were prepared was that when and if the time comes, it might be easier, well, the time comes to reduce agency budgets, it might be easier to look at where the spending occurred so that you could unwind some of that spending if necessary. It's not an easy task to, any way you look at it, capital reductions, operating reductions, particularly when over 60% of revenue is spent on the three cost drivers out there. Those three cost drivers are Medicaid, K-12 education, and retirement assistance. And given the revenue forecast, those three items can take almost the entire revenue stream if they're allowed to continue growing the way they have grown.
And rather quickly, too. I think the graph that you showed, I don't remember what the date was, where those three drivers eat 99% of your operating budget. What year was that, do you remember?
It was 2024, Mr. Chairman. But
that was sooner now.
Well, you know, I guess what I'd say is don't look too close at which year or the number on the top of the graph. The point is the trend.
No, I understand.
The trend and the trend is revenue is going down and those expenditures on the three drivers are going up.
Yeah, and in 1998 or something, I did a presentation to a class at the university, and I wanted to figure out, because at the time the topic was cutting the budget, just like it is now. Mm-hmm. And it was apparent to me that at that time, those three, we didn't have the first HERS. We just had Medicaid and education, and actually just using Medicaid, I think it was, because it was expanding sometimes at $120 million per year. It was ridiculous. And it was just in a very few years that ate the budget at that time. So I understand what you're trying to portray there. Senator Dunleavy?
Mr. Chair, just a quick question. David, have you looked at Goldsmith's ICER work that he's done?
Yes.
How closely do your assumptions, do you think, parallel his assumptions?
Fairly closely. I mean, what he's trying to do is a sustainable budget. I guess his approach is to kind of try to convert the oil reserves to some sort of cash flow, if you want to look at it that way. And I guess I look at it as it's an interesting approach, but I don't look at it quite so long term. I mean, I think 10 years out is a long time. And I look at it as just try to keep in line with your revenue during those 10 years. It's hard enough.
But your assumed deficits, these structural deficits we're looking at, do they parallel fairly closely his?
Yes, okay. They do.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David, and I know we'll spend a lot more time with this later on, but I'm still trying to figure out if we're better off leaving the $3 billion that the governor is suggesting, leave that in the CBR, and what would that do as far as making the CBR last longer? If we left the $3 billion alone and just continue to fund the retirement at this year's $700 million, I know it goes up in future years, but at least that does save your savings, and I know it has an impact on the operating budget, but. Any thoughts there? Are we better off not doing the cash infusion?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, the governor's plan or any plan to take money from reserves will reduce future state assistance. Okay, his plan is that we would reduce that to $500 million per year. So here's where we are now. Just try to remember that it's a pretty constant drop rapidly out of money in 2023. If you were to take the governor's proposal here, you take $3 billion and put it in reserves. You also drop your future retirement expenditures to $500 million. You can then look at the reserve chart and see that the slope of that graph is a little lower than it used to be because you've experienced lower deficits in future years. But as you said, you've got a $3 billion drop. So it does not extend the life of the reserves.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your chart on extending the savings out to FY24, what are you assuming in those out years that we would be spending on capital?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, $800 million per year. So, you know, that's something that's merely an assumption. If you want to say, well, fine, let's go to a $600 million a year capital budget. Whoops. That's a big capital budget.
That's a big that's what
line I can live with.
Lyman wants that one.
Not even going to show that one on the screen. So if here's the governor's with a $600 million capital budget, and there you can see that you have extended the life of your reserves. There are other things, other options on retirement. The one we've discussed, or I've discussed with the chairman, is a more pay-as-you-go kind of approach. If you were to adopt that just for PERS, and this isn't doing TERS yet, but that's another change. So there are options. The chairman says, I'm never going to get invited to any parties if I keep talking like this, right? But I don't mean to be all gloom and doom here. I don't think it is that gloomy. There are options.
We'll get to that point sometime, David.
Yeah, you convinced me. I'm actually fairly optimistic because I believe the revenue forecast is somewhat conservative.
By the way, that's David's optimistic face. I don't know if you're right. Hey, can I ask a question, David? And I don't want you to have to get off into multiple scenarios here, but can you plug it? Since you brought this graph up, you're probably going to regret it because it's workable, and there's probably 100 questions we could ask you, or 100 scenarios we could ask you. Would you put in $50 million per year reduction to the operating budget and then flat and see what happens to reserves at that point?
Yeah.
Because that's, as James pointed out to me, that's cumulative, so that should have a fairly significant impact.
Okay, that's a 2% reduction per year. That is not $50 million because we're going from basically $4.4 billion to 3.6. But we can see what that would do, and there you're looking much better. But that cut is closer to $75 or $80 million per year. So if you wanted to try something a little smaller, a 1% annual reduction in the operating budget. And this, again, this is not 1% this year. This is 1% every year.
Right.
And you still are going to be reducing reserves, but I would look at that and say, yeah, but at least you're out probably till the early 30s.
Okay.
Here. So I think your point, if it's the point you're trying to make, is that the operating budget's critical here,
right?
And it's growth in the operating budget that has put us at the budget levels we're at, and that if you can reduce them even by $50 million per year, you're much better off in the future. And of course, capital spending is going to do the same. And that's my point. I'm not looking at that first chart and saying, the crash is coming. There's nothing you can do about it. In 2023, we all better move because it's the state's falling apart. I've seen what happened in 98 in other years. The legislature, the governors step up. Budgets are held back. I mean, you could also say that, oil prices have always bailed us out, but it's not just oil prices bailing us out. It's expenditures have been restrained when they needed to be restrained. So this is focused probably more on the future than on the FY15 budget itself, but I know that Karen Rehfeldt was here, talked to you about the 15 budget. I have no quarrels, no differences. She's trying to outline the governor's policy, and I don't have much to say about the policy and plans. It's more technical here, and whether you want to focus on the future, which I'm talking about, because I don't think you can make good FY15 decisions without looking ahead and seeing what can face us if we don't make good decisions in 15. But whatever you do, Ledge Finance is here to assist you getting through the FY15 budget process or taking a longer-term view of state revenues and expenditures. most of what I said today is taken straight from the overview, and for those of you who don't have a copy, it's in the copy room. It's also on the web. It has the fiscal summary, a review of the language sections, and a write-up for each of the agencies for subcommittee work. And I hope you find it useful as you start your work on the budget. That's really all I have.
Okay. Members, do you have some kind of larger questions about the governor's budget, some of the things that he did that maybe David could address? Senator Dougherty.
Thank you, through the Chair. It's I guess, more of a statement. The number stays the same. We can shift whatever priorities we want to around. Well, technically speaking, we can shift whatever priorities we want around within the budget, operating budget, as long as you don't exceed that amount, that'll disrupt these calculations. In other words, if this body, the governor, talks about putting more money into education, that's fine as long as we reduce in other areas within the operating budget and don't exceed the overall number.
Through the Chair, if you want to hold the line and you spend more money somewhere else, you'd have to spend less on other things.
Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I find the conversation intellectual, and I'm wondering if we need to set some criteria as we look out over budgets. We've had the luxury of years of having oil provide for us. And if we look too far out in our future and we're trying to make sure that we can't see the end of the money on the graph, we may not make the best decisions with the dollars that we have today. So I'm to try to shift to a more positive note. If we were, which we are, the board of directors for the largest resource development company maybe in the world, we have assets, and what are we doing to analyze every dollar that we invest? So we know there's no magic bullet. When I served on the fiscal policy subcommittee in the other body, we documented every project that we could find that was out there so that we could review all the options that Mr. Teal gave us to help us have a softer landing if we hit the road, hit the wall. And none of those are palatable to Alaskans. We don't have them behind us. They want us to protect their permanent fund to make sure that they share in the wealth of Alaska. They do not, in my opinion, by at least a majority of 50% plus one, support a statewide income tax. They do not, specifically at individual community levels, support the state of Alaska taking a sales tax and putting it on top of other municipal taxes because it will drive the economics of those cities away, which leaves us very little opportunity except to look at our reserves and to invest those reserves in a way that has a greater rate of return that will start digging us out of the hole that we have dug ourselves into. And so I'm wondering, actually I'm excited. Next Tuesday, we're going to start talking about investment opportunities. And the governor mentioned it in his budget, and that is, should Alaskans invest in a natural gas pipeline? Right? Yet to be determined whether that's a good move for Alaska. But if we were to invest, or if the Finance Committee takes that issue under advisement, it's one opportunity to invest where we might see a greater rate of return on a longer horizon. Now, gas is that 20-year commitment. So when we are afraid of making a 20-year commitment with a company that is going to see profit for those 20 years, if we're in there as a partner, we get that profit too, and our dollar generates twice. It generates in our ownership interest and our ability there, but it also generates in revenue to shareholders, right? So I'm wondering if there's something that we're not considering that's in front of us in the financial markets. Are we reviewing, as a finance committee or as legislative finance, opportunities in looking over revenue shoulder on what they're doing in our sub-accounts or anything else? Is there another way to use the dollars that we have in front of us to dig quicker on behalf of Alaskans? And what kind of financial resources do we need to bring to bear to look at every dollar that we're investing? I think that you've given us one. If we want to take up, Mr. Chairman, formulas, then maybe the Senate Finance Committee should look at those formula-driven areas and see if we're getting the investment return from a financial perspective. If you take education, we're getting a big bang for our buck in trying to reach all students and provide them the best opportunities. But I am not gloom and doom. We are going to shift into forward, and we need to go faster than 25 miles an hour, but we don't need to break the speed limit. We need to, you know, my whole point, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, is what if we look at 2024 and we say there's a cliff, and we run to just stay away from the cliff, we're not going to make the best decisions. So I've watched Alaska go up and down with the price of oil, really, the price and production. It's a multiplier. So what is our horizon? Should our horizon be 1 year, which I think is a mistake? That's certainly not fiscal policy planning, only to look at 1 year. But is 10-year the right horizon? Because there's so much unpredictability. It seems like we know what's going on in a 1 to 3 year period. So I just don't, for me, I get afraid when I see that 24 and everything gone. It's not making me think positively about what is the best decision for Alaska today. And Mr. Chairman, I support you that we have to hold right now. But what can this committee do in our jurisdiction to help guide the state in making good, prudent decisions? And I don't mean to stand on a soapbox and preach, because I know everyone at this table cares about those issues. But what else is out there? If we were a CEO of a company, what would we do to benefit our shareholders, every Alaskan that lives in our state? What's our strategic plan?
Well, Senator Fairclough, one of the things that I think about when I look at the horizons and the price of oil versus production and all of those factors that we rise and fall on, the one conclusion that I come to is that regardless of the price or production, none of it justifies a $6 billion operating budget. I don't think there's any way to survive that under any scenario. I mean, the other day I was speaking with some folks from Revenue, and they're very, very optimistic about the dollars that will come to the Treasury on a gas line and ownership, which was news to me, because, you know, the mantra for years has been, well, gas just doesn't give you that much.
Ownership does, yeah.
But even that, as optimistic as it is, it doesn't survive a $6 billion and growing operating budget, and then all the things that the unknowns that hit you on top of that, which, you know, more unfunded liabilities or those kinds of things. Plus, the markets, there's a correction coming. There's got to be one coming. So you can reinvest your dollars in a lot of ways, but I think we're headed for some probably down times on our returns on investment. I don't know. My bunion tells me that. My point, I'm sure I have one here somewhere. I guess it's just the point is that $6 billion is not survivable. that's kind of my take. That's all I'm concentrating on. The capital budgets and the investments and all those things are all very necessary for us as a board of directors, as CEOs, to look at the future. But those are revenue areas, and I think that mostly the people at this table, for now, we're faced with expenses that we've got to deal with. And that's not in any way to disagree with what you said, Senator Fairclough, at all. You kind of made me think a little bit as you were talking. Senator Dunleavy?
Yep.
Did you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Teal, Scott Goldsmith has said that, is it 4.7? 5.7 is... 5.7 is a sustainable number. 5.5. Thank you, Mr. Keithley. Mr. Teal, if we were to achieve an operating level of 5.5, how long do we have to hold it?
And I would correct, I'm reluctant to correct Mr. Keithley on this. I think 5.5 is the total. It's not just the operating budget. It's the total.
Correct.
Yeah. Total capital and operating. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, no matter what the number is, what I'm trying to get to is the time value of money and how long before that number starts going up. So if you were in a hold pattern and trying to hold back, how far out does that timeline look like? Do we hold at 5.5 for 1 year, 3 years, 5 years? Do we have to hold it forever? He's basing, Mr. Goldsmith is basing that purely on the revenues that are in the ground and the assets that are there under current assumptions. How do we change the dynamics? Where are the levers in that proposal, or is there any levers in that proposal that we can do something different? As an example, and please, for any media listening, this is an example, and it's extreme, and it is not anything that I'm suggesting. So with that caveat...
You have just assured.
With that caveat, a $2,000 fish was one of the ways several years ago that if out-of-state fishermen wanted to come into the state of Alaska and take a king salmon out of our waters, it cost you $2,000 per fish. Not that anyone, maybe a few people could afford to pay for that, but I'm guessing that we'd have fall off, and maybe that calculation was based on the current king salmon tags that were taken and that $2,000. I'll bet you that fish is worth a lot more because there's going to be a very few people that take that fish. But we have options. So how do, I don't know, I just want to solve the problem.
To try to respond to that, I can tell you that that's something that you might be looking at here, roughly $5.5 billion a year. It doesn't matter. I achieved that by saying zero growth and zero capital budget. But it doesn't matter. Spending is spending, whether it's capital or operating. The point is your total spending here is about $5.5 billion per year. Now you can look at what that does to the reserves, and your problem goes away. And that's why I say this model, looking at just revenues year by year, expenditures year by year, reaches very similar conclusions to Scott Goldsmith's longer term view of the world. And just to comment on what you were saying about what investment opportunities do we have, I think the discussions are extremely valuable. One thing that you need to take into consideration, though, is that you don't have that much time for those discussions. If the longer you delay, the closer you get to that fiscal cliff, the fewer options you have. Right now, you have billions to invest. As we spend them, yeah, and we have, you know, if we continue to have deficits, your reserves get lower and lower, which means you do not have the investment capital. So I think your point is that you don't need to go 90 miles an hour, but you should think about these things something faster than 25 miles an hour. And I agree with you completely that now's the time for the discussions, because if you start having them in 2022, you don't have the options anymore.
Senator Dunleavy?
Under.
All right, okay. Senator Hoffman?
Well, you know, I think that when we look at the drawdown of the CBR and the SBR, people need to realize that, and I don't think the average Alaskan realizes that we do not have a balanced budget without reserves. You know, I think the last year was FY12. In the future, we are not having balanced budgets unless we have the reserves, and that, I think, is the problem. And whether you stand on one side of SB 21 or the other, how does 21? Because that was the vote to, I think, to turn around the oil, flatten it out, and turn it around, and I don't know when it flattens out or turns around, and I don't think no one has the answer, but that was one of the solutions last year. This year, all we see is deficit spending all the way out to forever until something happens.
Right.
And I think the average Alaskan doesn't realize that.
I think that's a good point. Senator Fairclough?
Mr. Chairman, some latitude just to respond to Senator Hoffman. It gets very confusing because we do have a changing tax regime, and the number looks very similar to our deficit. But you know that it's production and price that is driving almost all of this, and that the production, because it's fallen, and the price that actually map more Alaska production is actually performing better. And when we look at that global market that is out there, it appears, unless there is a war or something else, that prices may be pushed down. As America becomes more energy independent, Alaska's gas may be less valuable or more valuable if we can get it onto a spot market and ship it. And so we have to have a healthy industry, which is why, for me, it's disheartening when I hear people point to SB 21 and tie it to this. I know it's part of it, and we want to be clear with the general public, but it's also part of the solution. And we just, because we have asked our finance people to be conservative. We want to have budget numbers that actually exceed our projections versus the other way around, where we don't have the money to pay for them. So I don't mind being on the other side of the conversation on SB 21 and talking about that, but right now, $105, I believe the administration is backing those numbers up. We are performing better, and we anticipate those numbers to stay the same. So we can do the comparisons and continue to bring that up and talk about that, but the only way I believe ACEs will perform better on the progressivity portion only is if those prices start to spike.
But my point, Mr. Chairman,
was that
the average Alaskan doesn't realize that we, in the future, we do not foresee a balanced budget without reserves, and we're going down. And someday, unless things change, someday we're going to have no reserves.
And you know, you're talking about the world economy, and you read these disturbing reports that the Chinese economy may tank, which in some respects that's good for us, but in other respects that's going to drive the price of oil down dramatically. You know, can you guys imagine $45 a barrel oil like happened after the $145, $150 barrel oil, and it dropped within months down to $45. We'd have to have tanks surrounding this place to protect us. It would be the zombie apocalypse. Senator Bishop.
Did I hear bells ringing?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Just to my little 2 cents worth here at the end, we've been to dovetail on what Senator Hoffman said about, you know, going forward some point in time, and we look at the graphs, and depending upon how you model it, you know, we could be out of funding in some point in time in the future. We're focused on oil and gas. That's a good thing. I'm the eternal optimist, and it's just a comment. It's not a ding or on anybody, but it's some guiding principles to listen to David as how do we capitalize and spend our capital dollars on these projects going forward. So we haven't talked about mining. And mining, I could be a little off, but I think it added the most jobs in the state here in the last several years. We are a resource-rich state that is 50 years behind the rest of the world on discoveries in this state. I think it's a huge opportunity going forward for Alaska's economy. It's a real bright spot, not kicking oil and gas to the curb, but it's a sleeping giant. And there is a lot of positives there in this state with going forward, and mining, I think, is going to be a central driver in that. And lastly, I'd just like to say, you know, I sure don't have any degrees in economics, but if I was had a say on how we spend our capital dollars, and I think I have a little bit, is I would be focused on projects that's going to add revenue to the state treasury going forward.
One of the problems that we've always had, and I agree with everything you said, one of the problems we've always had is that you increase economic development in the state, but it doesn't do anything for the treasury because we don't have structures in place that the tax or fees that significantly provide revenue to the state. Maybe isn't a bad thing. I made the comment the other day, and I think it's true, that smoking, the only thing we have right now other than oil is smoking, that provides the second highest amount of money to the state treasury other than oil. That's pretty zany, if you ask me. Any other comments or questions? Oh, yeah, we've got the schedule for... Coming up next week, we'll be meeting every day next week. Monday is going to be the commercial heads of agreement overview. The Commissioner Rodell is going to testify, as well as Commissioner Balash and Mr. Fowski from the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation. That'll be Monday morning. And we'll make additional announcements as time comes for the rest of the week. Other comments or questions? Anything for the good of the order? Hearing none, we're adjourned for today.